You're tuned to the Iowa Art Showcase, Iowa Public Radio's monthly performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Welcome to our June edition. Grab your picnic basket. This month, we'll be heading outdoors to Iowa City's Riverside Theater in the Park for their presentations of Shakespeare's Hamlet and Sheridan's 18th century gem, School for Scandal. Plus, we'll see how the Repertory Theater of Iowa conjures up Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream at Salisbury House in Des Moines. We'll visit the John and Mary Papa John Sculpture Park in downtown Des Moines for the celebrated Des Moines Arts Festival. And we'll learn about the amazing community and university collaborations surrounding Hancher's statewide Preservation Hall Jazz Band Living with Floods concerts and their unique Hancher Site Ceremony featuring performances by San Jose Tycho and Rindy Eckert. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
I'm an advocate for live theater, and I'm an advocate for classical theater because I think it's important to look to the past to understand the present and to help yourself grow into your own future. And when you come and see these plays, and they're two of the greatest plays of the English speaking stage, it's such a privilege to be able to come one night and see Hamlet and the next night to see School for Scandal. And what I love about it is that hundreds of years ago, when they were first born, these plays, people just like us gathered in a theater and were entertained by them and provoked by them. And now we as a generation get to learn from them at this moment in our lives. And I hope everybody will take advantage of it. And there's something really special about this little theater in the park.
Ted Sweats, Riverside Theater in the Park's guest School for Scandal director, talking about this summer's Riverside Theater in the Park's productions of Shakespeare's Hamlet and Sheridan's School for Scandal being presented June 14th through July 7th. Ron Clark, Bruce Wheaton, and Jody Hovland founded Riverside Theater in 1981. Jody Hovland.
We wanted to work and we wanted to make theater in Iowa City. And it's just a dream come true that we were actually able to make that happen. I must say that we were fueled by tremendous naivete. We had no idea what we didn't know about making theater. We were trained as actors and Bruce as a director and playwright. And so we felt we had enough skills among us to make a little theater, and by gosh, we did. And along the way gathered around us some fantastic artists who made us look very, very good. And it turned into a life's work of which we are very, very proud. It's just been truly a dream to be able to have a life here in such a livable place. We're passionate about Iowa and about our particular community. And then to have created a professional theater that has become an artistic home not only for ourselves, but for so many other artists is just really, really rewarding. So we're the lucky guys.
Jody Hovland, Riverside Theater's artistic director, is appearing in Riverside's productions of both Hamlet and School for Scandal. Between September and May, the Black Box Riverside Theater, located on Gilbert Street in Iowa City, presents contemporary productions. In 2000, they launched an open-air 472-seat Shakespearean Globe-inspired second venue in Lower City Park.
We just feel like we've got the best of both worlds. We get to work very, very intimately for most of the year, and then in the summer we stretch out. We bring in artists from all over the country, actors and designers and production staff, and have a company of about 40 people who launch two classic plays in repertory. And this year, it is Hamlet and the School for Scandal. So this is our 14th summer in the park.
And this park setting has like a pond, quite idyllic out here.
The stage is set against a bluff in the park. The acoustics are lovely. We do not mic our actors. We hire really well-trained actors, and there isn't a bad seat in the house. It's really a magical setting, and I think to see these classic plays outdoors under a night sky is a pleasure of a very rare kind.
And it's what's terrific about it. I've worked on a lot of venues, a lot of Shakespeare festivals across the country. This is the most intimate outdoor experience I could ever have as an actor and as a director. It is a terrific space to see a Shakespeare play. And it's just a great gift to the city and to the area, this whole festival.
Well, let's talk about this year's Hamlet. I don't know if we want to get into the plot, if we have enough time to cover it.
Well, it's one of the great, great plays, of course, and it's a perfect revenge play. We know that Hamlet's father has died and that his uncle has assumed the throne and has, in very quick fashion, married Hamlet's mother, the widow of the late king. Hamlet thinks something isn't quite right with this arrangement, and the events propel from there. This is a play that we've been terrified of doing for a long, long time. And as Kristen Horton, the director, said when we were chatting about the possibility of it, she said, "Well, it scares me half to death, and that's so exciting. Let's do it." And she's done some beautiful editing of the script for length only, so that it's going to come in probably with an intermission just under 3 hours or 2:45. And Ted, I know you've had experience with this play as well.
Yeah, it's one of those great experiences, Hamlet. It's something everybody has some sort of knowledge of it. It's in the culture, every culture. And it is one of the truly great stories. You live through Hamlet's struggles, and when it's over and he's dead, you realize the great loss, because you realize that revenge has taken somebody who would have been a great king. And it's such a waste. You know, it's often said that when you do comedy, the idea is to lift the burden of the world off the spectator for a moment. We get to do that in School for Scandal. And then with Hamlet, I think what we do is put a particular burden on the audience for a moment, so they can see into a story and through the story, see into their own lives. And that's the function of storytellers, to reveal something to you that you never saw before. And with these two plays, it will be an absolute delight to put a burden on you for one evening and lift all your burdens off of you the next.
Tell us some of the famous quotes that come from Hamlet that maybe folks don't even realize that how ingrained it is into our culture.
Oh, to be or not to be, of course, is the most famous.
Something's rotten in the state of Denmark is a good one.
Yeah.
And then you have Polonius's speech. You know, it's neither a borrower nor a lender be, to thine own self be true. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember. Isn't there hundreds of words he coined in this particular play?
Yes.
First time ever used, you know, several hundreds of words, I think it is. So, you know, we forget, because the year is 2013, but, you know, we forget that when these things were first produced, this was all cutting edge. In fact, when Hamlet opens, it opens with a ghost scene, and you see the dead king's ghost, and he appears exactly like he did in life. This is the first time on the English-speaking stage that a ghost is portrayed that way. Usually, they're portrayed as, I guess people would know it from A Christmas Carol, when Marley comes back with crazy hair and chains and wrapped and howling. This is what a ghost usually looks like on stage. But this is, you know, this is groundbreaking. And we forget that Shakespeare was that innovative. So it's just a great chance to test your skills and to learn something great from a great play.
Ted Sweats, Riverside Theater and the Park's guest School for Scandal director, along with Riverside's artistic director, Jody Hovland. They talk about a special musical addition to their production of Sheridan's School for Scandal and explain where the play fits in.
Restoration comedy is known as the comedy of manners, and what that means is it's just stories about the privileged class. and their obsessions and indulgences. And you got to understand, all of the restoration movement lasts for 50 years or so, and it's a reaction from England coming out of puritanical rule. So all the plays go crazy. They're all about sex and money, sex and money, sex and money, and sex and money. And in a restoration comedy, there's a rule. The biggest bastard will always win the day. It's very cynical humor. Now, you get Sheridan, who's just at the tail end and coming into what they call the Georgian period. And what's really exciting about Sheridan is you still get the incredible intrigues and the terrible, wonderful appetites of these characters in School for Scandal. They're just scandal mongers that just live for gossip. You get all that. However, the person with the true heart will always win in a Sheridan play. And I really like that aspect of it, to reward someone who is generous, even though he's got, okay, he might be a gambler and he might be a playboy and he might, but he hasn't done anything to hurt anybody but himself. And that's a great story. And it's good that the people who are ugly in nature, you know, they get their due at the end of the evening, and that's sort of fun.
One of the most charming things, I think, about this script is the use of character names. You can gain immediate insight into your character by just learning your name. For example, there's Lady Sneerwell, and one of her pals is called Snake.
That's right.
There's Crabtree, and there's Benjamin Backbite, and Lady Candor, Peter Teasel. It's just a great array of theatrical characters.
And it's also a very modern idea. So people are going to recognize a world very, very familiar to them.
Where news is manipulated, gossip is celebrated.
And it's all to, of course, make yourself bigger and everybody else smaller.
Now, with this production, you have incorporated two musicians to compose some music to go with the School for Scandal.
Yes, I'm the head of the acting MFA program at University of Missouri, Kansas City, and we have a terrific sound design program there. And often you get these young men and women who are also composers. And so a while back, I did a production of The Country Wife, a restoration play, and a young composer, Matt Chanson, worked on me with that, and we've sort of adapted some of that music for Scandal, and then a student, Alex Glamian, right now has added more music, and it's a type of play that needs a bounce and needs a buoyancy, and they're terrific composers, and it's going to be a very exciting part of the production.
Ted and Jody continue discussing Sheridan's work.
The plot synopsis in the School for Scandal is that you have, you know, literally a clique of people who get up in the morning to kill character in others. And then you also have these two brothers, and they have an uncle who is their guardian, who is a military man who comes back from India after serving, and he's going to test their character by appearing to them. He hasn't been back in 16 years, and they were young when he left. So he's going to go in disguise. He's going to go test their characters. And, of course, everybody thinks that Joseph Surface is the upright brother, but he is one of the worst scandal mongers and intrigue makers of the day. And Joseph, who is very honest, but he is a playboy with all those appetites, but generous to a fault to his friends and people in need. Charles Surface is his name. And Uncle Oliver comes into the picture in disguise, and lo and behold, the world is turned upside down, because we do find that the one that we thought was the rake is really the person with the most generous soul. And there's also a subplot that appears in a lot of literature of an older man marrying a younger woman, and that's Sir Peter Teasel and Lady Teasel. And what's nice about Sheridan, that plot in a restoration comedy would be the older man a devastating victim. In Sheridan, we find that it's a path to true love and to true appreciation. And maybe it's just because in the year we live in, there's so much violence around us and so much negativity. Maybe I just need this story for myself. Maybe that's why I've come to direct it. But there's some real beauty in it. And it's the natural love will win out over artificial love. And real generosity will win out over greed. And these are big, big questions that the theater can throw in a story that is hysterical. But what I think it was Bernard Shaw who said, you know, it's always good to get the audience really laughing a lot. And when their mouths are open laughing, you shove some truth down it. And Sheridan does that for us.
Ted Sweats, guest School for Scandal director, and Riverside's artistic director, Jody Hovland, discussing this summer's Riverside Theater in the Park productions of Sheridan's School for Scandal and Shakespeare's Hamlet, being presented on the festival stage June 14th through July 7th in Lower City Park in Iowa City. For more information about these productions and how to get tickets, please go to riversidetheater.org. The Bard is also appearing several times this month in Iowa. The Des Moines Metro Opera is presenting Gounod's Romeo and Juliet at the Blank Performing Arts Center in Indianola between June 21st and July 14th. And later, during this edition of the Iowa Art Showcase, we'll learn details about Shakespeare on the Lawn at Salisbury House. Don't go away. We'll see why more than 200,000 people each year flock to the John and Mary Papa John Sculpture Park in our state's capital city to attend the Des Moines Arts Festival. Plus, we'll hear how Hancher is presenting Preservation Hall jazz band concerts all across the state. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. The John and Mary Papa John Sculpture Park in downtown Des Moines will be the site on June 28th through the 30th for one of Iowa's most celebrated outdoor events, the Des Moines Arts Festival. Executive Director Stephen King is gearing up for this year's exciting festival, situated in Western Gateway Park.
It really is about the art. I can't say enough good things about the artists that will be here. These are the pros. These are folks that they're in galleries around the country. Some of them are even in museums, their work. They love to interact with their audience. That's why they do this. That's why they don't sit at home in their studio and just sort of crank out work for a manufacturer or for, you know, a big box store or something like that. They're on the art fair circuit. They're doing 20 to 40 shows a year. They love to talk to the people that are in the city that they are visiting. And one big piece of feedback that I get every year from them is how much they love coming to Des Moines. They love coming here because people are smart about art. They thank them. They walk inside their booth. They look around. They might say, I can't afford anything here, but thank you very much for being in Des Moines. We really appreciate it. People in Des Moines really reach out to our artists and make them feel at home. Sort of like I think anybody feels when they move to Iowa. People here really make you feel at home. And so the artists really enjoy coming here. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have a very competitive show, why artists really work hard to try to get into our show, is because of that atmosphere. Plus, people like to buy art. They love to buy art here. So the idea that you can spend some time looking around, shopping for some of the best art that you're going to find anywhere in the country, and then be able to buy that artwork from the artist, from the person who created it with their hands, and really develop a relationship with them. I think that's one of the things that I love so much about the artwork that's in our house, whether it was myself or my wife or my kids, everything that's in my house, we have a story. We could tell you a story about it. It's not just something that we walked in and found it off the shelf and thought, gosh, that would look good on the wall. We sort of did it the opposite way. We bought something and realized, well, where are we going to put it? But we loved it so much that, and it was the story behind it was so important to us that we decided that we needed to have it in our lives. And I think that's one of the best things about art and about how it can touch your life and be a part of you. And here it is, right here in your own downtown. So I think there's a lot of accessible art at the festival. I think between some printmaking that some of the artists are doing, some of the smaller paintings that artists are doing, the photography is affordable, ceramics, all the ceramic work, jewelry. The emerging Iowa artists have some work that's a lot less expensive. Sure, if you want to spend, you know, $40,000 on a piece of artwork, I can show you where it's going to be and I can tell you what booth to go, where to go, right? But if you want something that's under $100 or affordable or something that you can start a collection with, I can show you that too. There's a lot of artists that are selling very affordable work and that's just as beautiful and just as wonderful and can be just as much a part of your life as anything else. So it's a great event. It's fully accessible. It doesn't matter where you live, where you're from. We've got something here for everybody.
Stephen talks about the festival's roots.
Before it moved downtown, or before its 16th year, it was Art in the Park at the Des Moines Arts Center for 40 years. So it really does have a pretty rich history. So if you really want to go back to its true beginnings, you're looking at a 55-year-old event that has taken place here in Des Moines. The Des Moines Art Center started it. And it ran beautifully, and it ran so well that it outgrew its space behind the Des Moines Arts Center in the Rose Garden back there. And community leaders at the time decided that, you know, downtown was growing. They really wanted something that could really bring some vibrancy and some life and some artistic life to the downtown. And gosh, the Arts Festival was poised and ready, and it came downtown, and it's just been growing like gangbusters ever since.
Stephen shares more festival details.
When you look at the Des Moines Arts Festival, we really have to look at it in two realms, the way we look at it. We have a juried art fair, which is a huge component of the festival, and then there's also the Des Moines Arts Festival, which really we look at as a community-based, all-accessible festival that is really open to all the arts. We like to say, you know, behind the walls, that there's an S in the arts. It is the Des Moines Arts Festival, so we want to reach out to as many of the art disciplines as we possibly can. But on the juried art fair side, we're one of the most competitive shows in the country. We get over 1,100 applications for the 185 spots that are available at our show. So we're very well known across the country. Every year we go to the IFEA convention and walk away with 20 plus awards for the work that we're doing, both in our marketing and merchandising. But really those awards that mean the most to me, of course, are the ones that have community about them. And these are all really national events that are getting a lot of attention, that are sponsored locally and supported locally by our community. So, I mean, you really start to think about the festival and the draw that it has, both locally, statewide, nationally, internationally. I mean, the Des Moines Arts Festival is on the tongues of a lot of people.
What's so important about having a juried art festival?
You know, when it gets down to it, it's about it being fair and balanced. We are an all-original show. We don't allow copies at our show. So what that means to you, the consumer, is that we don't allow reproductions. That means if you buy an original painting, you've got the original. There's no copies of that, unless the artist sells copies, but you're not going to see them at the arts festival. So an all-original show means a lot to us. A juried show means a lot to us. It means I'm not choosing the artist. It means the staff's not picking their friends or whomever they would like to see in the show. We recruit a jury, highly qualified folks that know what they're doing in a jury room. They can look at the 1,100 applicants and the images that they provide, and they can continue to narrow it down. They've got the expertise. They can choose the best of those who have applied to the festival to be a part of it. We allow the jury to do the work of the selection process so that we can make sure that we get the best. We get the best of those applying, and that we have a well-rounded, high-quality, talented artist show.
Tell us about some of the different artists and some of the different artwork that you'll have.
You know, some of my favorites, Carla Fox is one. She's a jeweler from Bend, Oregon, who attends our show. She does some really remarkable work. Ella Richards out of New York City does, she calls it scissor painting, but it's scissor cuts on black paper, and then she mounts it on white paper. Really tremendous ink, very fine work, just really amazing. Of course, Chris Vance is a personal favorite local artist who's actually painting a mural as we speak up on the wall in East Village. Aaron Heikenborg, who's out of Georgia, is a really tremendous multidiscipline artist who does some great work with found wood, like out of sharecropping sharecroppers' houses. Kelly Hopgood is a great photographer, very popular photographer here in Des Moines, will be joining us this year. And our poster artist this year is Will Armstrong. He's out of Richmond, Virginia, does some really fantastic work. I'm really excited to get to meet him. He's not done our show before, so he does collage work. He does some oil-based pen and ink on collage. So he creates the work really on top of a canvas that's created from old maps or old hymnals or old books from the area that he's drawing. So whether it's Des Moines or Austin or Portland or wherever it might be, that background is going to be of that city, of that space.
Of course, with Iowa Public Radio, we have to talk about music. You are also going to have some stages of music involved.
We do. We've got three stages. The Aviva main stage presents all music acts. So everything from, gosh, rock and not rock, I guess. I don't know really all the other genres. You could throw them all in there. We've got something for everybody. We'll put it that way. We have the Great Jazz and Wine Pavilion. It's presented by Meredith. And this year with the Civic Music Association is working with us to book all the acts on that stage. So there's great jazz. Throughout jazz, and jazz. If you like jazz, that's the place to be, along with some great wines that will be inside the Jazz and Wine Pavilion. So you can come in and taste some wines, drink some wines, kick back. It's in a covered facility. So if you want to get out of the elements for a little while and still enjoy, have that festival experience, that's the place for you. And then, of course, the Guide One Performing Arts Stage, where we've got dancers and poetry and some acoustic music. And it's a little bit more laid back, but presenting more of the disciplines within the arts. And it's over in our Creative Kids Zone, which is on the lawn of the Meredith Corporation. And that's really because it's a lot more family-oriented type of stage.
Tell us about your new location downtown then.
The Western Gateway Park has been our home for about 4 years now, with the John and Mary Papa John Sculpture Park being implemented into the Western Gateway Park. It really made a lot of sense for us to move to the current location and surround that park. The synergy with that sculpture park is just wonderful for a world-class arts festival.
And in addition to all your music stages, you also have a film festival.
We do. The Interrobang Film Festival, presented by Nationwide. A few years back, we felt like that was a big piece that was missing from our festival. And we started working with Nationwide and with our friends at the Downtown Library. Over the last couple of years, there's been some new equipment installed and the starting to work on a national level with Without a Box and some other places. The idea of just being able to attract films from all over the world and filmmakers of, let's say, all different disciplines and styles and talents, levels of talents, has really helped us catapult the events, become very popular. Typically, it's standing room only inside the films. Of course, we're inside the library, so you're not, it's not like we can have 10,000 people inside the library, if you know what I mean. So it's still, again, it's one of those places that if the elements are too much for you, step inside and watch a really nice film.
I read somewhere that you have some wonderful food booths as well.
We really work hard to make sure that we don't have a lot of repetition in our food. We want to make sure that there's something there for everybody. So, you know, if you're a meat lover, great. If you're a vegan, we got something for you too. If you want some ice cream, we've got that. You know, on the beverage side, we're working with Gateway Market this year as a new wine vendor. So we're really excited about that relationship with them and with their wine cellar, because they have something terrific to offer. The Iowa Craft Beer Tent is going to join us this year. So we've got craft beers from all over the state of Iowa. So we're excited about that. So we've got some really nice food and beverage options. You know, it's just the art is just not hanging on the walls at the Arts Festival. So,
and you have all these happening things, like you have interactive exhibits and artists doing demonstrations, things that are
interactive.
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, one of our pillars is interaction. We decided several years ago that we really wanted our audience and our show to interact with each other. You know, the arts is not passive, the way I view it. I think the more you're going to be able to get out of the arts is you need to interact with it. And so we all but, I'll say all but, require everybody that's going to have a space on site, outside of our visual artists, of course, to interact, to provide some sort of interactive arts-related activity. If you want to get involved, we've got something for you to get involved with. And I really get a huge smile on my face every time I see a dad and a son or a grandfather and a grandchild doing a project together, working on something together and completing that task and just seeing the smile on their face or the look of accomplishment. It really is terrific. It's something that we really strive for and are really proud of.
The Des Moines Arts Festival's Executive Director, Stephen King. The festival, which runs between June 28th and 30th, has emergency plans in case of stormy weather. For more information, please go to their website at DesMoinesArtsFestival.org. Atumwa is hosting their first annual American Gothic Performing Arts Festival this summer, running between June 7th and July 7th. For more details, please go to their website at AmericanGothicFest.org. The River Loop Arts Festival will be held today and tomorrow at the River Loop Amphitheater in Waterloo. The 35th College Hill Arts Festival will be held on June 14th and 15th in Cedar Falls. The Juilliard and June Festival will hold its concert on June 20th at Clark University, and the Chamber Festibuque will hold its concert on June 22nd at Loras College. Both of those concerts will be held in Dubuque. Details at niasom.com. The Dubuque Symphony's Summer Melodies Concert will be held on June 30th at the Dubuque Arboretum, and the Des Moines Symphony will be presenting their 20th annual Yankee Doodle Pops Concert at the Iowa State Capitol on July 3rd. Just ahead on the Iowa Art Showcase, we'll stretch out on the lawn at Salisbury House, and we'll take a look at Hancher's exciting June lineup. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
It's a 28,000 square foot estate. It's got 42 rooms. A lot of the architectural detail to the house came over from Europe, so it's certainly, you know, not your standard English looking house. It's an American castle. It's really remarkable that this house, and it's fully furnished, that it exists in Des Moines, Iowa. My husband and I traveled in his previous career and saw homes in Newport, Rhode Island, where the Vanderbilts and the Astors and the Gettys had their summer homes. And I remember remarking at the time, gosh, I had no idea homes like this existed in the United States, let alone in Des Moines, Iowa. So if you've not seen it, I encourage you to come for a visit and bring your family and friends, because it's quite something.
The Director of Marketing and Communication for the Salisbury House in Des Moines, Katie Wengert. Welcome back to the Iowa Arts Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. Tucked away on Tonawanda Drive, this castle has an unusual and interesting history.
Salisbury House was the private family residence of Carl and Edith Weeks. Carl Weeks was a cosmetics pioneer. He had a company called Armand Cosmetics, and his most notable accomplishment is that he took face powder and cold cream and created what's now known as foundation. So that is how he amassed his fortune, was in the cosmetics industry. He and his wife decided to build a new home in the South of Grand neighborhood. It was built between 1923 and 1928 and was modeled after the King's House in Salisbury, England. So it's got different architectural styles to it, but primarily they were trying to emulate this home that they had seen in Europe. A lot of the architectural elements and features of the house were brought over from England, you know, whether it's rafters that I'll talk about as we talk about Shakespeare, or paneling, flooring, key pieces of art, rare literature. So the family did live there. They moved in 1926 as it was being completed, and moved out in the mid-1950s. What's unique is that during the 1930s, they hit financial hardship and brokered an arrangement with Drake where Drake's art students could continue having access to the house. And they then owned the house and the contents, Drake did, but the family had an agreement that they could continue to reside there, paying $100 a month rent. So when the family moved out of the house, Drake and the Weeks family made an arrangement with the Iowa State Education Association to take over the house and the contents, and they had offices there for over 40 years. The foundation, Salisbury House Foundation, was formed in the early 1990s with the sole purpose of trying to assume control for the house and the collection so that it could become a cultural attraction. So it's really only been a museum for about 15 years. And part of that period of time, the house was closed as they were doing restoration projects to stabilize the house, new roof, furnace, air conditioning, electrical, sprinkler system, you know, all of the really glamorous things that go on behind the scenes. But it has allowed us then to bring the collections back out and put them in place where they were when the family resided there. So for a historic house museum, it's unique in that the original family furnishings and content is still in existence. And at least our curator has made an attempt to put everything back to where he can see through notes and insurance policies and things like that where they had the things when they lived in the home.
Katie outlines current Salisbury House events.
We do offer daily tours, Tuesday through Sunday. We do guided tours and we do self-guided options. In addition to just tours of the house, we have a lot of public programs, the music series, the history series. We bring in just amazing cutting-edge authors that are historians. We have our Concours d'Elegance, which is our classic car show. We have our annual Gatsby Gala fundraising event. And then we have more family events like Mysteries of the Castle as a Halloween children-friendly event where we bring in conservationists and have all sorts of family activities. And then we have our annual Holly and Ivy holiday home tour where we not only have our home decorated by florists and local decorators, but we have a couple private residences that are on display for the holidays too. And then the other event that we are bringing back, we took a year off, is Shakespeare on the Lawn at Salisbury House. So that will take place here in the end of June.
I think you also have a piano that you got restored as well.
We have the family's original Steinway & Sons piano. It was a custom piano that was commissioned by the Weeks family. It's a one of one. There's not another piano like it anywhere. Essentially, they took 16th century oak and hand-carved it to look Elizabethan, sent the paneling to Steinway, and Steinway built a piano to insert inside of the panels, which is unusual. And when they completed it and delivered it to the Weeks family in 1930, it came with a letter saying that this is the single finest instrument that Steinway had ever produced. That particular musical instrument has been fully restored, and it is used for weddings and for our chamber music series as well.
Katie talks about their Shakespeare on the Lawn collaboration with the Repertory Theater of Iowa to present A Midsummer Night's Dream.
This will be our ninth performance of Shakespeare on the Lawn at Salisbury House. This year's performance will be A Midsummer Night's Dream, and it's scheduled to be Thursday, June 20th through Sunday, June 23rd, unless weather doesn't cooperate. And then we've got a couple rain dates, which is the 24th and the 25th. They specifically chose those dates because it coincides with the summer solstice and a full moon. But essentially, it's a performance of Shakespeare out on our lawn. Guests can sit right atop the lawn or into the gardens. They can either bring a picnic blanket or we'll have lawn chairs that guests can just take a seat. We will have picnic baskets that they can pre-order through Occasions Made Right Catering, or they can bring their own picnic basket. Stoms will be there selling gelato and bottled water because it could be hot. But it's basically just a picturesque setting to watch Shakespeare. One of the unique things about Salisbury House in our Great Hall, the rafters in the Great Hall came from the White Hart Inn, which is where Shakespeare and his troupe used to stay and presumably gave spontaneous performances where Shakespeare himself could watch his troupe perform his works. It shows the connection to the house and why Shakespeare is a great fit for Salisbury House. In addition, our library collection contains Shakespeare's works. So it's just a great tie-in to our collections, in addition to being a beautiful setting for people to watch Shakespeare with our house as the backdrop.
The Director of Marketing and Communication for Salisbury House in Des Moines, Katie Wingert. Carla Cash will direct the Repertory Theater of Iowa's Midsummer Night's Dream Salisbury House and Garden performances on June 20th through the 23rd. For more details and tickets for Shakespeare on the Lawn at Salisbury House, please go to salisburyhouse.org. Tonight, the Quad City Symphony is hosting a concert at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport. And on June 8th, St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Marion will host a silent movie night. Just ahead, Hancher's Chuck Swanson. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
We are excited. These are the sorts of things that we're doing now without a building. You don't need a building to get out there into the state and to make a difference in the lives of Iowans. Our vision is that Hancher strives to enrich the experience of Iowans, transformative experiences through the arts. And so I definitely think that this seven-city tour and working with all these other university partners, I do think that we're in for a great adventure.
Hancher's Executive Director, Chuck Swanson. In a statewide project to commemorate the fifth anniversary of the 2008 floods, Hancher partnered with the University of Iowa's Colleges of Engineering and of Education, the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research, the Iowa Flood Center, the iExplore STEM, and the State Hygienic Labs to reach out to seven communities in a project called Living with Floods. Not only did they target middle schools by working with 27 teachers to create and develop flood-related curriculum, they also involved the Preservation Hall Jazz Band to present free community concerts.
Just a couple examples of some of the great things that have happened is that a lot of these students have collected first-person accounts of people who were involved in the 2008 floods, like firefighters and others that did a lot of sandbagging and really did things for the community. And then they've designed and they've really created murals as to the responses that they received from these first-person accounts. Another community, there was some visual storytelling, and this is where the students collected oral histories of people who had been involved in the floods. And then these students wrote their responses to these interviews that they had with people. Also, students have explored the history of floods in some of the communities, and also what actions their community has taken in the past and what actions they're taking now to prevent future flooding. And there have also been students who have explored and compared Katrina, the floods in Katrina, to the floods in Iowa. So it's just been, to me, just incredible to see the, you know, and hear about some of these great projects that have come as a result of this institute that was held because of this project of Living with Floods. And what I love the most about it is a lot of these teachers have said and shared with us that the science teachers had never worked with the art teachers before. So this interdisciplinary approach has really been quite successful. Something else that has happened as a result of this project is that we have taken on board two women here from the University of Iowa, Gina Schademan and Beth Hochstedler, who had hosted a STEM festival here at the university. And they were so successful with this, they had this vision that they really wanted to have STEM festivals all across the state. And it just seemed like it was a perfect match here to bring science and art together. So in five of the seven communities, as a result of the Living with Floods project, there either have been or will be STEM festivals. And then another part of this project is adult workshops. The Iowa Flood Center, which was formed after the 2008 flood, they are just do so much service to the state of Iowa, but communities are really not aware of all the services that they provide. So they are hosting adult workshops and adult forums in these communities so they can share services that they provide. They can also talk about extreme weather conditions that we're having now. And they can also, you know, share with people the local and also the state recent issues about flooding. And then all of this culminates finally with a tour by Preservation Hall Jazz Band from New Orleans. And this is a band that really shares such joyous celebratory music. They for sure have had their own experience with flooding in Katrina, once we explained to them what this whole project was about, they excitedly jumped on board. They were just wanted to be a part of this, and they're anxious to share their stories along with anxious to hear our stories about the Iowa floods. So it will be a 7-city tour with free outdoor performances. And what's so great about this is that this is Hancher's 40th season. We're coming to the end of our 40th season. And when Hancher opened, Preservation Hall Jazz Band opened Hancher. So this just worked so well into the whole history of not only floods, but also Hancher's history. And we've had several conversations with Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and one thing that they said about what happened at Katrina is that music came back before water or electricity. So I think the fact that we are adding music to this whole Living with Floods project, I think it is a perfect match. So it just shows the spirit of collaboration and working together, how you can accomplish such great, marvelous, wonderful things. And I also love the idea of mixing the science with the arts. I just think that interdisciplinary approach, we all learn from that, and we all benefit when everybody comes together and works together. So it's a huge, huge project. But there again, it's pretty exciting to already see some of the results unfold. And, you know, it's not that far along, and we are going to be, Preservation Hall Jazz Band will be arriving. So we anticipate a wonderful tour, a wonderful culmination to this terrific Living with Floods project. And we're hoping what we're doing along the way is we are documenting, we're taking a lot of photographs. And our desire is that we will have an exhibit at the State Fair of this entire Living with Floods project. So that's yet to be all finalized, but that's one of the dreams that we have.
Chuck talks about the rich history behind the Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
Preservation Hall Jazz Band, I'm pretty sure it was just last year they celebrated their 50th anniversary. They are really, they get their name from an actual hall that exists in New Orleans. I have a picture of it, but it's just, it's not much of a space, but yet jazz really started there. Preservation Hall Jazz Band has played there a lot. That's really where the history, and of course, that's where the name comes from. Dixieland jazz that they play, it's, I would say it's so joyous. It's really kind of music that just, you can't stay sitting down. You get up off your feet and you really, you can't help but move to the music. Typically, they usually get the audience up and not even moving at their space, at their site, but they usually, lots of times, they'll get the audience to even go along with them in a conga line of some kind. But as I said, they opened up Hancher 40 years ago. I think most everybody ended up on stage after the end of the concert. So I think when you think about an outdoor concert, you think about a concert where people are really coming together to, in essence, to celebrate. I think Preservation Hall Jazz Band will deliver quite well. They'll fit the bill. It's going to be the concerts will be something to remember for sure. To really, you know, show how far we've come, show what we've learned, and to really kind of celebrate the resiliency of people, you know, of Iowans. Because I do think that Iowans have they're pretty tough. You know, it takes a lot to get Iowans down. I think this is going to be kind of an unusual experience from even most of the outdoor things that we've done, because we will have a progression, you know, from the old building to the stage. But I don't know, I think that it's just one of those Hancher experiences that sometimes surprises, and I don't know, just the moment, you know, seize the moment, I guess, is sometimes the best approach to take. And I think that, there again, I think this is going to be one of those times when people are going to say, you know, I'm glad I was there.
Chuck talks about the history behind Hancher's unique site ceremony.
When the original Hancher was built, we had three construction workers who died. Scaffolding broke. Two of the workers died instantly, and then a third worker, I think it was about 4 months later, died. And so we have a plaque, a memorial plaque, on the east side of the original Hancher building. There's a tree there, too, that memorializes these three workers. And so we thought to ourselves, you know, we don't want anything like this to happen again, you know, when the new Hancher is being built, which is going to be about 30 months, you know, almost 3 years of building. And so there's a Japanese tradition, and a lot of times they'll have like a site ceremony where they'll bless the ground in some way to be able to make the ground safe so nobody is hurt during construction. So we have some dear friends, Japanese American drummers from San Jose, California. They're San Jose Taiko is the name of the group. And several years back, I think it was 2006, we had them for a statewide tour. These drums that they have, they're just, some are just so big and some are smaller, and but you can just feel it in your chest when they play these drums, and they choreograph the work too. They dance as they play these drums. And so at the time of the flood, they said, because we just really hit it off well, they said, if there's anything that we can do for you, for Hancher, we would love to, you know, let us know. And so we started to think about this Japanese tradition, and we thought, let's talk to our friends, San Jose Taiko. So we called them and asked if we could commission them to do a piece of work where, in essence, we would bless the ground, make the site safe for the next 30 months to 3 years. They loved the idea. They said, oh, we would love to be a part of that. And so we are going to build a stage, about a 30 by 40 foot stage, our production staff. So we are going to have that stage right outside the fencing, which is right directly north of the box office. And so San Jose Taiko, we started to talk to them, and they said they have a piece that's called Taiko Piece, P-E-A-C-E. And they said this piece, during this particular Taiko piece, Roy Hirabashi and P.J. Hirabashi, Roy and P.J. are the co-founders of San Jose Taiko. Roy will play the Japanese flute, and PJ will recite this poem called Taiko Piece. And it's all about making yourself larger than what you actually are to make a difference in the world. Well, they said we could replace that Taiko Piece, that poem, with another piece, P-I-E-C-E, about Hancher. So we came up with another Hancher artist, a dear friend of ours, Rindy Eckert. Rindy actually grew up in Iowa City. He's a graduate of the School of Music. He was here when Hancher first opened as he was a student. He attended Hancher, and since then he has made it big in New York. He's an actor, he's a playwright, he's a singer, he's a director. I mean, Rindy has really won numerous awards, and we have commissioned a lot of works by Rindy. So he definitely knows Hancher well. And so I talked to Rindy and explained all this to him, and I said, Rindy, would you put together a poem or narrative about Hancher? And then we can incorporate that into this Taiko piece. And he said, Chuck, I would love to do that. So since then, he has been out to California. He is the Taiko drummer, San Jose Taiko. They have worked together. They're putting together about a 45-minute to about an hour-long program that will, in essence, be our Hancher site ceremony. And so San Jose Taiko said, you know, so much history, so much energy, so much has happened in that old building that they want to start at the old building and work their way to the stage. They want to transfer all that history, all that energy, all that wonderful, those wonderful great things that have happened in Hancher to the new site. So Mortenson Construction, they are the construction managers. They're the ones that are overseeing the whole building of Hancher. They love this whole idea, and so they said they could get a lot of their construction workers here that day and have them be involved in this whole site ceremony. So I'm just so excited about this. I just think that this is going to be another, you know, rich part of Hancher's history. I think it's going to be quite moving. I think it will be one of those experiences that everybody will remember forever. And I hope it makes the ground safe during this construction process of our new Hancher building. We're in for, you know, hopefully a beautiful evening and lots of people. We're hoping for a big crowd for this, because I think people have been waiting so long to see things happening, and things are happening. And so I think people will really want to be a part of this. And as I said, I think this really adds to that rich, wonderful history of Hancher. 40 years, you know, 40 years of delivering some great art and really making a difference in the lives of Iowans all across the state, students here at the university, really people of all ages, K through 12th graders. This is really, I think, a real significant event in the fact that it won't be long and we will be opening the doors to that new Hancher. And so any time that we can find a way to celebrate and to be excited about it all, I think it's a real good thing.
Hancher's Executive Director, Chuck Swanson. To find out more about Hancher's free Living with Floods outdoor June Preservation Hall jazz band performances in Des Moines, Council Bluffs, Muscatine, Cedar Rapids, Davenport, Iowa City, and Dubuque, along with their June 14th Arts and Minds Celebration of Partnership afternoon event on the University of Iowa's Pennycrest, and their special site ceremony scheduled for June 29th, please go to hancher.uiowa.edu. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. Today's Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for this production goes to Jody Hovland, Ted Swetz, Stephen King, Katie Wengert, and Chuck Swanson. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's production assistant Tony Daner, Iowa Public Radio's Catherine Perkins and Kathy Gonzalez, and Iowa Public Radio's technical producer Phil Moss. Thanks for this show also goes to Iowa Public Radio's Eric Jordan, Jason Burns, Garrett Van Leeuwen, and Alyssa Weiss. Program research was provided by Iowa Public Radio's Nick Carlo. I'm Jacqueline Allbloom. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.